Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just a reminder that we are going to be carrying President Obama's press conference tonight, his strategy for Afghanistan to be delivered at West Point. 7 o'clock is the time. It will replace the second hour of On Point. You can hear the address this evening at 7 here on the Ideas Network. Our guest this hour is quite a guy. His latest book is On Thin Ice, The Changing World of the Polar Bear. Richard Ellis is one of America's leading marine conservationists and is also considered one of the world's foremost painters of marine natural history subjects. He's the author of many books, including The Book of Whales, Dolphins and Porpoises, Great White Shark, Men and Whales, Feisty, his first children's book, the story of the successful rescue of a baby sperm whale, Monsters of the Sea, Deep Atlantic, Imagining Atlantis, The Search for the Giant Squid, Encyclopedia of the Sea, and a number of other books. He's the author of 80 magazine articles. His paintings have been exhibited at one-man show and group shows from coast to coast. 106, actually, of his paintings were selected by the Smithsonian to form a traveling exhibit of the marine mammals of the world. And these paintings are now in the permanent collection of Whale World, a museum in Albany, Western Australia. He has been a member of the Explorers Club, research associate at the American Museum of Natural History. And for a number of years, 10 years, he was a member of the U.S. delegation to the International Whaling Commission. Polar bears this hour, or as one of our astute listeners said, we should call this our Polar Bears Against Climate Change, because, of course, the book deals a great deal with climate change. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And, Richard, a great pleasure to have you with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. You start the book with this encounter with a polar bear back in 1994, when the world for polar bears was quite a bit different, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't as threatened as it is now. I was sailing to the North Pole on a Russian icebreaker as part of an expedition from the American Museum of Natural History. And when we stopped, or were stopped, by the ice, there were some Russian sailors who looked over the rail of the ship and saw that there was a polar bear right there, right close to us. And up to that point, for the most part, sailing through the Arctic ice, if you did see a polar bear, you saw it at a great distance, and somebody had to say, no, over there. See that thing that's moving, that other white thing? That's the bear. But here we had a bear within 20 feet of us, and we took a lot of pictures of this bear. But the point really was that at that point, as we continued to sail to the North Pole, when we got there, we crushed through 8 feet of ice. The North Pole, of course, is underwater, so there's no land there. So that's the way you get there, except in the winter when people can go there on dog sleds and by foot and however else these people want to get to the North Pole. But in a ship, you can crunch through the ice. This was September 1994. But later, 5 years later, when another icebreaker went to the North Pole, instead of finding 8 feet of solid ice, as we did, they found open water.
Oh my.
And this was one of the first times people had become aware that the ice cap was melting, 1994.
Mm-hmm. And what do we know about what's happened to polar bears as a result of that dramatic change, Richard?
Well, what is actually happening as we speak is rather terrifying, because the Arctic ice is melting as a function of greenhouse gases and global warming. As the ice cap melts, the water that was previously covered by ice is now heated by the sun, because in the past the sun's rays would be reflected off the ice and wouldn't warm the water, but with the ice gone, the water warms. As the water warms, more ice melts. So the Arctic ice cap is in this frightening cycle of melting, and there's no particular way to stop it because as the water warms, more ice melts. There's nothing you can do about that. Greenhouse gases, you can cap and trade, you can stop all kinds of emissions, you can stop smoking, you can stop eating meat, you can stop doing almost anything, but the water is still warming. Mm-hmm. And as the water warms, the ice melts. And this, of course, directly and specifically affects polar bears.
Yes. And it has become, the polar bear has become really a poster animal for global warming. The cover of your book is one of those that, and I've seen a lot of pictures of polar bears that kind of haunt me because you don't know if they're going to make it or not. Can you talk about the picture that's on the front of the book, Richard?
Sure. It's a photograph that I didn't take. I took a lot of the photographs in the book of bears here, there, and elsewhere, but this photograph I didn't take. But when I saw it, it comes from an Alaska stock photo agency, and when I saw it, I realized that it absolutely epitomizes the plight of the polar bear. It's a bear in the water, looking rather nervously over his shoulder. It's almost obviously a male, although you certainly can't tell. But looking over his shoulder, because what he was looking at was the ship that on which the photographer stood, and the ship was kind of chasing the bear, I don't think with any harm in mind, but that's what it looks like. It looks like a bear that is kind of escaping from a ship, and so the bear has a kind of nervous look on his face, and he's in the water. And so the point, really, that I wanted to make with this photograph was polar bears, which normally live on and stay on the ice, even though they're excellent swimmers and spend a lot of time in the water, the photograph was supposed to show polar bears in the water as the ice melts. Now, that's a very elaborate scenario to depict in a single photograph, but that was what I wanted to indicate. I never explained this in that kind of detail, but the point is really that the title of the book is On Thin Ice. There's a bear in the water. You're supposed to infer from looking at the photograph, because the bear looks like it's in trouble, you're supposed to infer that polar bears, this one and others, are in trouble.
Yeah. Talk more about these creatures. You love these creatures, and you've written books about other animals, but there's something majestic, beautiful, strong, and some of the characteristics of polar bears. I didn't know about that until I had read your book, how they can smell, how far they can swim.
Well, the natural history of the polar bear is one of the wonders of nature, because they are among probably the most highly specialized predators in the world. There are many other specialized animals. Koalas, for example, eat only eucalyptus leaves. Pandas eat only bamboo leaves, that sort of thing. But most predatory animals, think of lions, tigers, leopards, wolves, grizzly bears for that matter, eat a variety of food, whereas the polar bear is what is known as an obligate carnivore, which means it is designed, and I'm using that word advisedly, but designed to feed on only meat. It doesn't, because there are no plants where it lives, it doesn't eat plants or berries or fruits or leaves the way grizzlies do, and so it only eats meat. Polar bears specialize in eating seals, but they will eat walruses, they will eat carrion in the form of a whale carcass, but it has to be meat, and they get all the nourishment they need from seal carcasses, mostly, which they have to hunt and kill. Now, polar bears live, it's very important, I think, to point out that polar bears live only in the Arctic. Many people have seen these Coke commercials where cute little polar bears interact with cute little penguins, and they all have
yes.
Coke. But polar bears live in the Arctic, and with one exception that has nothing to do with polar bears, penguins all live in the Antarctic. The exception is a particular group of penguins that lives in the Galapagos, which is virtually on the equator. And these are kind of warm water penguins. But all the other kinds of penguins, of which there are many, I think there are 17 species of penguins, but all the other species live in the Antarctic. So any indication of polar bears interacting with penguins is Disney fantasy. Now, polar bears live in five countries, all of which circle the Arctic Ocean, whereas the Arctic itself is water surrounded by land. The Antarctic, where penguins live, is land surrounded by water. There's the Antarctic continent, and we won't talk about that very much because we're heading north here, talking about the Arctic. The five countries that ring the Arctic Ocean are Canada, the United States in Alaska, Greenland, Norway for Spitsbergen, and Russia. And Russia, of course, with the longest east-west coastline in the world, the northern coast of Russia, has probably, with Canada, most of the world's polar bears. And they all live on the ice. It's an interesting question as to whether polar bears are marine mammals or not, because the mammals we know as marine mammals, whales and dolphins and manatees, for example, never come out of the water, so they can't be anything but marine mammals. But the other kinds of marine mammals, seals, sea lions, walruses, they come out on land sometimes. Polar bears hardly ever come out on land specifically, but they do come out of the water on the ice. Mm-hmm. And ice being frozen water, I think nobody knew that until I said it, but ice being frozen water means that they never go on land. So are they marine mammals? It's an interesting question that people tend to worry about, but the way it applies and the reason it is important to answer that question is because polar bears are protected in the United States by the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, but I'm trying to get to the lives of polar bears.
Right.
They live on the ice almost all year round. The females, after being impregnated, dig a den in the snow and give birth to usually twin cubs. After nursing, the cubs, as they're born, are about the size of a cottontail rabbit. Huh. They're hairless, and their eyes are closed, and they live in the den for 3 or 4 months nursing on the mother. The mother, prior to digging the den, has not eaten anything for 6 or 8 months.
Oh, my God.
She is able to sustain herself and the nursing of twin cubs in a den in the snow, under the snow, for months at a time until they come out. And then when they come out, the mother begins to hunt, because she's quite hungry by that time, having not eaten for 8 months. And she begins to hunt, and the cubs are still nursing, and they will nurse for a year and a half to 2 years. So when you see photographs of a large polar bear and two smaller ones, it's always the mother and her twin cubs. The males during all of this time do not den up. They march around incessantly. They virtually never stop walking unless they are hunting. And they hunt by usually waiting outside the seal's breathing hole. And if the seal is foolish enough to stick its head out, the bear, with its very, very powerful front paws, scoops the seal out of the hole in the ice and feeds on it. But that doesn't happen every 10 minutes, and the bears walk around for hundreds of thousands of miles during their lifetime doing that and looking for an occasional female because they need to make some more little twin cute polar bear cubs.
Amazing.
So here are the bears who don't live together, and you rarely, except in one place, and I'll get to that, but you rarely see more than a couple of bears at any given time because they're spread out over this enormous, enormous area of ice. And they're pretty much loners. The female with her two cubs, obviously not a loner, but the female with her two cubs keeps looking for things to eat. That's what she does. And the male, occasionally looking for females to breed with, but for the most part looking for things to eat, and walks around and walks and walks and walks. And when we get to the discussion of the melting ice cap, it will become painfully apparent that if there ain't no ice to walk on, the bears are in trouble.
Right. Oh, my. They are, as you say, and you've answered the question here, unless you want to add something, that these animals have fairly, are far more complex than most people realize.
Well, most people, I think, don't get to think about the details of polar bear life. That's
right.
Not something that people tend to worry about a lot. But because the polar bears, as you said, are the poster children, if you will, for global warming, suddenly people are beginning to ask themselves, hey, wait a minute, if there is no ice, what will happen to the bears? because their entire lives depend almost exclusively. There are occasional, and there's an area that I will talk about, where they are not on the ice. But for the most part, most of the bears in the world, say 98% of the world's polar bears, live on the ice and are walking around looking for something to eat. And what is happening is now people, especially with Copenhagen looming on the horizon, people are beginning to say, hey, climate change, something needs to be done about that. And the subset of that, of course, is, hey, climate change, something needs to be done about that. What about the polar bear?
Yes, exactly. Well, I think many of us have that image, Richard, of the polar bears, the ice just melting beneath them, and they die. I mean, there's an image that goes with all of this that's just hard to take in.
Well, they don't die because there's no ice. I mean, they're excellent swimmers, and polar bears are among the greatest of long-distance swimmers. Polar bears have been found swimming happily, I don't know whether that's the right word for a bear swimming around in ice water, but happily 60 miles from the nearest ice floe. They can swim for 60 miles, maybe more. But if they are swimming in search of an ice floe or in search of pack ice where there might be seals, and there isn't any pack ice, obviously they can't swim forever, and they drown. And this is the image that, in fact, Al Gore showed in his book, An Inconvenient Truth, and then again in the film, his PowerPoint presentation, there is an image of a bear kind of swimming into eternity, not drowning, but doing something like it. Right. And this is an image that people are now taking in, the idea that the disappearing ice definitely affects the polar bears, because no ice, no seals, no seals, no food, no food, no polar bears.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls for you, Richard. Richard Ellis is our guest this hour. His book is On Thin Ice, The Changing World of the Polar Bear. He's the author of a number of books. He's a celebrated marine artist as well, whose paintings have been exhibited in museums and galleries all over the world. He's written for Audubon, National Geographic, Discover, Smithsonian, and Scientific American. And we welcome phone calls for him at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. He says in the afterword of his book, in the past, if someone asked me why polar bears, about the best I could come up with was, I like polar bears. I like other animals too. For a long time, I drew and painted nothing but horses, and more recently, I've been painting whales, sharks, and dolphins. But there is something about what's happening to polar bears now, and there is something about the majesty of the big white bear, strong, big. The bear is white, which contributes to its fascination. But he has learned so much about polar bears, and now we have the polar bears facing very uncertain futures and reminding us what's happening to the world in terms of global warming. So it becomes a bigger story. To your phone calls in a moment, 800-486-8655. On another subject, a reminder that President Obama is speaking about Afghanistan this evening at 7 o'clock and what his policy will be in terms of additional troops and what they'll be doing and what the timelines are for the various tasks that they will be engaging in, and if there is a timeline for troops leaving Afghanistan, an important address tonight at 7 o'clock, and we will be carrying it here on the Ideas Network. It will replace the second hour of On Point. To your calls in a moment, I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now, and let's start with Dan from Menominee Falls. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, good morning. I think this is just so much climate alarmist rhetoric. I wondered what his thoughts were on the East Anglia University in Britain. They had the climate research unit when it was revealed through the emails that were hacked of quote-unquote researchers falsifying data, deleting data that did not agree with their agenda, deliberate deception, and just massive fraud. It seems to me that climate research is no longer research, but it's advocacy science to promote a political agenda. And
oh, for heaven's sake, Dan, it's like 99% of the world scientists believe in this, so it's I guess there are a handful of people who don't see the evidence, don't see what's happening. How do you respond to this, Richard?
Well, I'm sure we can spend the rest of the
we're not going
half
to.
hour discussing that. But the fact, as you point out, Kathleen, the fact is that regardless of this hacking into the emails of some scientists who may or may not, and this is very questionable, who may or may not have faked some of the data to make a point, regardless of that, as you point out, 99% of the scientists in the world believe, I mean, they're having Copenhagen because they believe in climate change. They're certainly not having this meeting to discuss hacking into scientists. And so what we're listening to from your caller is a flat earther. We're listening to somebody who says the scientists are lying to us. The earth is really flat. It's just some kind of conservationist rhetoric. People have the wrong agenda. What they really want to do is save the animals. What an utter waste of time that is. What we ought to be worrying about is getting some more oil or whatever these flat earthers want to worry about. I think that the idea that hacking into these documents somehow reveals that all the scientists in the world are lying or wrong is one of the more preposterous things I've ever heard.
Yeah. Let's talk about this decision made recently by the Interior Department, Richard, a controversial proposal designating more than 200,000 square miles of land in Alaska as critical habitat for polar bears, but also allowing oil and gas exploration to continue there.
Polar bears have always been protected in the United States. Well, always, that is, since 1972, since, as I said, the passage of the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which includes polar bears. You cannot shoot or take or even import a polar bear carcass. You can't shoot a polar bear carcass, but you can import one into the United States because they are protected endangered species. They are nominated by the Endangered Species Act as threatened. Now, designating 200,000 square miles or whatever it is as polar bear habitat is fine, but the exception is that oil and gas drillers are allowed to drill there, and this is the important and here, and if they feel threatened by polar bears, who might be just curious about what all this machinery is doing over the next hill, they're allowed to shoot them. So they're protected except from oil and gas drillers and oil and gas drilling. So in fact, and this is another interesting subject, the curiosity of polar bears, but in fact, if a polar bear shows up outside your oil rig, you can shoot it, protected endangered species or not. Now that in itself is not going to endanger the species. I mean, if you shoot a dozen polar bears in 200,000 square miles, the rest of the polar bear population isn't going to lie down and die. But in fact, it isn't good for the polar bears. And designating this area as polar bear habitat is actually no different than what existed before.
How many polar bears are there? Do we know?
Well, it's an interesting question. We don't really know because a lot of them live in utterly inaccessible areas like off the northern coast of Russia where there are no people, and an occasional scientist camps out up there and counts the bears that are there. But because bears are peripatetic, they wander. As I said, they can cover 100,000 square miles in their lifetime. We can't really count them, but the polar bear populations of the world have been broken up into 19 discrete units that the polar bears may not respect because they all border on one another around the Arctic Ocean. And we think there are about 22,000 bears left in the world. I can't tell you the pre-exploitation population because nobody counted.
Right.
But because so many were killed early on by whalers and sealers in the north. They just stood on the deck of their ship or went for a hike and saw a bear, so they shot it. The early estimate may have been, and I emphasize may because we don't really know, may have been something like 40,000 bears. That isn't a very large population, but still it was sustainable until the habitat began to disappear. And now we're down to 22,000. And the area I was talking about where I said bears aren't on the ice all the time is called Churchill. And it's in Manitoba. And it's virtually the southernmost population of polar bears in the world. It's north of Toronto. I mean, it's not around the corner. But that's where it is. And there are some roughly 2,000 bears that come ashore every year in Churchill and wander around, sometimes in the town, which is another story, sometimes in the town of Churchill, and wait for the Hudson Bay to freeze. And when Hudson Bay freezes, they go out on the ice. This Churchill is called the polar bear capital of the world because you can go there fairly easily. You're guaranteed of seeing polar bears. You go out in what's called a tundra buggy, which is kind of a bus on airplane wheels, and you lumber over the tundra, and the bears are unaffected by you or your tundra buggy, and you get great photographs. I've been in Churchill several times, and you get a lot of photographs of polar bears. Now, the point is that where there used to be 2,000 bears in the Churchill vicinity, there are now something on the order of 930.
Oh,
and what's happening to them is because Hudson Bay is freezing later, underline here global warming, because it's freezing later, they don't get the opportunity to go on the ice as soon as they used to do. Because they can't do that, they go hungry. Because they grow hungry, the females cannot sustain their cubs in the den because mm-hmm. they haven't had enough food before they have to den up. So we're losing the bears of Churchill, the most heavily studied population of polar bears in the world. People have been studying them since the 1970s. And now we know that, because you can count them. You can see most of them at any given time because they're all standing around waiting for the Hudson Bay to freeze.
Oh.
Yep.
So they stand around in town? They just wander in?
Well, they stand around outside of town. They used to come into town when the garbage dump was there, because polar bears ain't no fools, and if you're going to leave food out for them, regardless of their preference for seal meat, if you leave empty hamburger dishes out there or pork chop bones, they're certainly going to eat that.
Right.
And so they used to come into town, then they moved the dump 5 miles out of town, then that didn't work very well. Then they enclosed the town dump in this kind of airplane hangar, and that pretty much dissuaded the polar bears. But they used to come into town, and Churchill itself is famous for the danger element. They have signs all over the town saying polar bears attack without warning and stuff like that. But in fact, there have been hardly any polar bear attacks in Churchill. There was one where a man decided to go visit the garbage dump when the polar bears were feeding. That didn't work out very well.
No, I would imagine it wouldn't. And yet we have this image of polar bears, and maybe it's because we're associated them with all kinds of bears, and we tend to fear bears, that they're dangerous, that they will harm you, they will kill you if they get close to you?
I did a study when I was writing the polar bear book. I had heard a story of a grizzly in California, a trained bear at a establishment that trained bears for movies and things like that. There was a grizzly bear there, and the trainer was working with it. The bear, for reasons obviously unknown, killed the man. They were playing, and it wasn't an accident, but the bear actually killed the man. So the experiment I did was to pick that from that moment on to see and search for grizzly bear attacks. And in 3 weeks, that's 2 weeks actually, that followed that attack in California, there were two more grizzly attacks on people. In neither case was the person killed, but the bear chased the person and mauled him very badly in both cases. During that period, there were no polar bear attacks. And in fact, during the entire period of writing this book, there were no polar bear attacks. Now, there have been. That's not to say that if you see a polar bear and you're wandering around in Churchill, you climb out of the tundra buggy and go out and scratch it behind the ears. That's not a good idea. But in fact, they are much more curious than dangerous. And in the past, when the whalers and sealers went up to the Arctic, looking for bowhead whales mostly, and whenever they saw a bear, they would shoot it. And if they saw a bear following a dog sled, they would assume the bear was chasing the owner of the dog sled, and they would shoot that bear. Mm. If a bear came into camp, they would think, of course, that the bear, the next thing the bear was going to do was attack everybody and eat them. And so they shot those bears. And they shot hundreds and hundreds of bears who were simply minding their own business. And then what happened is they told the story about the bear coming into camp and ready to eat us, and we had to shoot it in self-defense. And these are the stories that built up over the years so that in time, the polar bear developed this utterly irresponsible reputation as being a man-eater, which they're not. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're big and they're powerful and they eat meat, and if you wander around dressing up as a seal, you're in a lot of trouble.
I would imagine that you are. They are really big, aren't they? I mean, they're huge.
They are the largest land predators in the world.
Huh.
Standing upright, the largest polar bear can be 11 feet tall at the head. The largest polar bear ever weighed, had to be shot before it was weighed, weighed about 2,000 pounds.
Woo-wee.
The largest brown bears weigh about 1,600 pounds and don't stand as tall because they're not as thin and rangy as polar bears. So they're big, they have power, they're enormously strong. They can lift a 400-pound seal out of the water with one swipe of their paw. They can, in fact, and they've been filmed doing this, attack and kill 2,000-pound walruses, which have them considerably outweighed and are very hard to attack. And I know that because I used to try and bite walruses. No, I really didn't, but... But they have very thick skin. There's no place to grab a walrus. Hmm. And yet polar bears can kill them.
Hmm. I guess I wonder, do we know why they wouldn't eat fish?
We know that in captivity, where you can't provide them with a live seal or a recently dead seal, they eat all kinds of things.
Oh.
That is... an answer, but not a good one. They will eat fish. They eat the Missouri company who makes Purina, owns in Missouri. They make something called polar bear chow. And you feed your polar bears fish and meat sometimes and grain and vitamins and all kinds of things. Polar bears normally don't eat fish. I suspect they would if offered one. But because they can't catch them in the wild. They're very... good long-distance swimmers, but they're not as certainly as flexible or as mobile as a fish.
Right.
And so they you can't catch a fish the way you catch a seal, which is wait for it to stick its head out of a hole and scoop it out of the water. And so probably if there were dead fish, I know they've been seen feeding on salmon the way grizzlies feed on salmon sometimes, but that's not part of their diet. And it all comes to the question of... can we expect the polar bears to change their diet and change into other animals if the ice disappears? And the general answer to that is no.
Mm.
Evolution never works backwards. You can't de-evolve into something you're descended from.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea that, oh, well, if there's no ice, they'll just wander into Alaska and they'll hunt caribou and chase them around
right,
for a while.
Right.
Remember, they are very poorly designed for hunting on the tundra. Why? Because they stand out like a sore thumb. They're white.
Right.
You can't sneak up on anything if you're wearing waving a white flag saying, please
right.
ignore me, I'm just a polar bear.
Richard Ellis is our guest. His latest book on thin ice, The Changing World of the Polar Bear. He is author of a number of books, and he's also a celebrated marine artist, and he has drawings in this book and some absolutely extraordinary pictures of polar bears. Two more phone calls in a moment. The number is 800-486-8655. The email address, talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tonight at 7, we will be airing the president's address concerning Afghanistan. at West Point. That's at 7 o'clock this evening. It will replace the second hour of On Point. And then we'll be talking about it tomorrow. Juan Cole will be our guest. So we'll examine it quite thoroughly, the first hour of our program tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Richard Ellis is our guest now. 800-486-8655 is our number. Anthony from Milwaukee, hello.
Hi there, how are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Real quick, just a comment and then a response I'll take off the air. But it seems we have two issues. We have the issue of global warming, and then we have the issue of the polar bears. And for all due purposes, the real issue, or what we're talking about, are the polar bears. And what I find to be a little bit disturbing is that whether you believe in global warming or not, which, of course, is one's right, whether it's an informed decision or not, there seem to be a lot of people who then just automatically ignore issues such as the polar bears, which, granted, one has to do with the other, but it doesn't necessarily mean that not believing in one means you can ignore the evidence of the other. So my question is whether the speaker or the guest runs into this problem a lot. People who will who don't believe in global warming, but who then automatically ignore the obvious effects of global warming, or ignore declining polar bear population.
Well, if I may respond. I do run into it a lot. I don't run into as many people who say, as the commenter before said, it's all global warming is a plot, and that really isn't happening, and scientists made it up for their own agenda. But what I did, because this is in essence what I do, what I did was I used the polar bear as the avatar, if you would, of global warming. And the book, it goes into some detail. I often thought it was too much detail, and yet one review said too much about polar bears, not enough about global warming. I was originally going to call the book On Thin Ice, The Polar Bear and Global Warming, and my editors talked me out of it, saying it was too political, it would frighten people away. They may have been right, it's too early to tell. Yes, I do run into people who do not acknowledge global warming, and therefore, I've heard somebody tell me that because Sarah Palin told him, but not directly, but on the air somewhere, Sarah Palin said, I don't know what everybody's worried about, the polar bear populations are rising. Well, they're not. But, you know, some people can say any old thing that occurs to them, and it gets into the press, and people like me spend an awful lot of time denying the truth of these statements, because they're simply not true. But if Sarah Palin says, remember, she was the governor of Alaska, where there are a lot of bears being shot, and a lot of bears live in her state, so it's not somebody from Louisiana just talking about polar bears. But in fact, yes, I do run into people who deny the whole thing. What I chose to do is use the polar bear and picture the polar bear as an example of global warming. I want to read to you a very short statement that appears as the lead paragraph in an article in the magazine called New Scientist. And this magazine was published last week. It says, the headline is, Sorry, Bear, You're on Your Own Now. And the sentence is, Climate change is transforming the Arctic so fast we could see ice-free summers in our lifetimes, while favorite species like the polar bear disappear. But rather than focusing on this sad fact, the real message for the Copenhagen climate talks is to put human self-interest first. I agree with that. I don't think we ought to sacrifice ourselves or our children or our grandchildren for polar bears. But I do think that the polar bear is the indicator of what's going on today, and that's why I wrote a book about polar bears.
Do you have high hopes for the Copenhagen summit?
I don't. In fact, I did at one point, but the fact that there are that it takes so long to do anything, assuming even that Copenhagen, with all of its varying interests and all of its various countries participating, if they did, in fact, tomorrow, as soon as it starts, on whenever the date is, the 7th, I think, whenever it starts, if they, the first thing they did was, okay, let's cut all global emissions, let's cut all greenhouse gases to zero, the Arctic would still heat up because it's heating up. You can't turn that off. It's not like a stove or an oven where you just flick it off. But I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to dither. Dithering is the order of the day, specifically about climate change and global warming. They're going to talk about it a lot, and they're going to say, well, maybe we ought to do something soon. Let's vote on it. Let's vote on having a meeting to discuss what we're going to do when we have the next meeting. I don't think they're going to vote for anything, and anything helpful. And I really think that it's a flag that people are raising, saying how much they care, but whether or not they're going to do anything about it is questionable. And in fact, whether they do anything or not, the bears are disappearing. I was at a meeting in Sitka, Alaska, 2 weeks ago, where a polar bear biologist presented an image, a model of the ice cap in the Arctic, and showed what was going to happen to it in 50 years, 50. In 50 years, we can't stop this from happening, by the way, and in 50 years, the polar ice cap will be gone.
Oh, my.
That is the elimination of an ecosystem. Yeah. It's not just some ice floes and some polar bears and some seals. It's like waking up tomorrow and reading in the newspaper that Australia isn't there anymore. Mm-hmm. The Arctic ecosystem is an enormously important element in global climate. Forget climate change. In global climate, winds, tides, currents, ice, water, all are affected by what happens in the Arctic. And when the Arctic ice cap disappears, and there's no question that it's going to, the only question is how quickly. There's no question that it's going to. We will wake up. I won't. I'm not going to wake up 50 years from now except dead. But in fact, people will wake up 50 years from now and see that there's no polar ice cap. There's no polar ecosystem. All the animals, and people for that matter, all the Inuit and Eskimos who depend on this for their lives, are going to be in very serious trouble, if not extinct themselves.
Yeah. So, Richard, what is the critical action you think we need to take right now to prevent that from happening?
Well, quite frankly, I think we have to steel ourselves for change. We're living in an era of climate modification and earth change. These have happened before. They're usually natural. In this case, human beings are responsible for it. And I think what we simply have to do is understand what's happening. I would like to be able to tell you to send some money to the Polar Bear Salvation Fund, but there isn't one. And I don't think even sending some money and signing a petition is going to save the bears. We, the people listening to this program, will be alive and continue to be alive when there are wild polar bears. Our grandchildren may not be. There will still be bears. They breed in captivity. There's not a question. It's not like the dodo, where there won't be any polar bears. But what there won't be is any wild polar bears, and there won't be any Arctic ice cap. And I think that the action, which is not much of an action, I recognize, but the action is to understand that this is happening and to think in terms of preservation of the environment, not only for the Arctic, but everywhere. In other words, this is not a unique event. It's the signal event. It's the sort of flagship event of global warming. But it's happening everywhere. Coral reefs are dying because of global warming. The possibility of low-lying islands and cities being flooded is a serious one. So I think the action is to recognize that global warming is a very, very serious threat, and we may not, in fact, be able to save the bears, but we really ought to work pretty hard at saving ourselves.
Mm. John from Milwaukee, hi.
Oh, good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, John.
Just a couple of points. I was in Churchill about 3 years ago, and the number I remember in my head is that by the year 2040, if nothing is done, Churchill won't have polar bears. And the other comment I have is, I believe you had a guest, Eric Larson. He was like the first explorer that went up to document how much water there was on the North Pole in the summer. But anyways, that was another guests you had, I believe.
Yes.
There's a lot of water at the North Pole in the summer because there's no ice.
Right.
This is the first one that actually went up to document it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we went up in 2000, and we didn't document it in a scientific way. We documented it by looking. We were now at the North Pole at 90 North, and you look out of any side of the ship that we were on, and there's no ice there. That's pretty much scientific documentation, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I believe, Kathleen, you had Eric Larson as a guest. Is that correct?
Yeah, Eric is from this area. We've had him on talking about his extraordinary journey by foot as far as he could go. Yeah, it was a good show. In the archives, I think. Thanks, John. Nancy from
New York.
Nancy, hello.
Hello. I'm not one of the people who do not believe in global warming. However, I was at a Old World Wisconsin has a show about how all our kettles and moraines were formed, and Wisconsin was under ice years ago, and there were no SUVs. China wasn't spewing pollutants, and yet Wisconsin's no longer under ice.
Well, that seems to prove that global warming, I can tell from your attitude that proves that global warming is a hoax, because the fact is that over the last several billion years during the Earth's birth and development, a lot of changes have taken place. Wisconsin was certainly under ice. That doesn't prove anything at all, as far as I can tell. But if you like that as an idea, that things change, keep in mind only one thing. That, as you point out, there were no SUVs, and changes in climate took place over millions and millions of years. This is the first time climate change, whether you believe it or not, this is the first time that climate change can be attributed directly to human beings. There were human beings 12,000 years ago, but they certainly weren't driving SUVs. The fact is that nobody, except a couple of people that I've heard about, thinks that I don't believe in global warming. The same kind of people don't believe in evolution either.
The other thing that's happening, Richard, is that it's happening so rapidly, right? That the melt is happening, has happened so significantly over the last 20 years.
Right. What has happened is, and you can see this in any scientific publication, not only Al Gore's publications, but what happened is there was this kind of flat line rising gradually about the temperature of the Earth. It went up and it went down a little bit, and it went up and it went down a little bit, but largely it was going gradually upward. And when it hit about 1900, roughly in conjunction with the Industrial Revolution, where we started burning fossil fuels in a serious way, you get what is called the hockey stick graph. It goes along, just like you lay the hockey stick down horizontally and then looked at the blade. What happens to this graph is it goes along gradually rising, and then whoop, it goes up very, very sharply. If you remember from the film, Inconvenient Truth, Al Gore had to climb on a ladder.
Mm-hmm.
To show you the top of this curve. And it isn't ending anytime soon. It's continually going up. Now, we can argue on the air or in books or in scientific publications all you like about I don't believe in global warming, but you can't not believe in global warming any more than you can not believe in the sunrise. Mm-hmm. You can't deny the sun rising in the east and setting, and you can if you want to, but it's pointless.
Yeah. Mark from Milwaukee, hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Kathleen, I have to compliment you on this guest. Very, very important and very well-spoken individual here about the polar bear. A keystone species, the need to save it is critical, if not for its the bear itself, but for us. But I just wanted to, just correct one thing, and that was that, like most predators, this predator specifically likes to eat viscera and fat, and it will avoid the meat and leave the meat to be consumed by other animals. And it wants to eat viscera and fat.
All right. Richard?
Can I
Yes, I'd be happy to comment on that. Your caller is absolutely correct, but the reason for it is an interesting one. Yes, the polar bears eat almost only the viscera and fat. Sometimes they will eat the meat. The cubs will eat the meat while the growing female eats the viscera and fat. And the reason for it is that polar bears, in order to survive the ice and the water, have a very substantial layer of fat on their own. That's what the female is nourished by during her denning period, which can last as much as 8 months. So polar bears have an enormous blanket of fat around them. Their coats are not waterproof the way some birds' feathers are, and so they can shake the water off, but they get cold, and it's the fat that insulates them, very much like the blubber of a whale. So your caller is absolutely correct. The adult polar bears eat only the fat, if they can, and that's one of the reasons that they are so dependent on seals. You don't get very much fat from chokeberries.
Right. Richard, thank you so much. We're out of time. It's been a great hour. I appreciate all your time and writing the book, filled with extraordinary pictures as well. Richard Ellis, the book is On Thin Ice, The Changing World of the Polar Bear. It has just been published by Knopf. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing this hour. Thank you, Carmen. And John Treader, our on-air producer here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Thanks, everybody. We'll be with you tomorrow.